worldwide news update. Gaza ceasefire talks have resumed after weeks-long hiatus. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
After a weeks-long hiatus, international mediators are back talking to Hamas and Israel over a ceasefire in Gaza. A Hamas official says he's hopeful a deal to end the 14-month war is within reach. Ceasefire negotiations were halted last month when Qatar suspended its talks with mediators from Egypt and the US over frustration with a lack of progress between Israel and Hamas. Bassam Naim, an official in Hamas's political wing, said on Thursday in an interview with the AP there has been a reactivation of efforts to end the fighting, release hostages from Gaza, and free Palestinian prisoners in Israel. I'm Charles de la Desma.
According to its director, Israeli forces stormed into Kamal Adwan Hospital in Bayit Lahia in North Gaza overnight Friday, expelled some staff and displaced people before withdrawing, and bodies of people killed by airstrikes were on the streets outside. The head of South Korea's ruling People Power Party has announced support for suspending the duties of President Yoon Suk-yeol. It's a move analysts say greatly increases the chances of Yoon's impeachment over his failed attempt at martial law. VOA Seoul correspondent William Gallo has the latest developments.
There was a rumor that South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol may make a second attempt to impose martial law. Another moment of tension came when there were rumors that Yoon may visit the National Assembly to apologize to lawmakers, apparently in some sort of an attempt to find a pathway forward from this crisis that does not involve his own impeachment. When that happened, opposition lawmakers gathered to say, no, we don't want you to visit. What we want you to do is step down. It's not clear, though, whether enough of his colleagues will actually tomorrow vote to impeach Yoon, at least in enough numbers so that impeachment effort will actually succeed. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
This is VOA News. Taiwan's President Lai Ching-te has called on China to open its arms rather than raise its fists as he wraps up his first overseas tour since taking office in May. Details from VOA's Tommy McNeil.
The remarks during a news conference Friday in Palau came in response to widespread speculation that China will hold military drills around Taiwan in response to his trip. Lai's trip, which included U.S. stops in Hawaii and Guam, took him into the heart of a maritime region where China is jockeying with the United States and its allies for influence and control. He also visited the Marshall Islands, Tuvalu, and Palau. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Syrian opposition activists and pro-government media both say insurgents have entered two towns just north of the central city of Homs, bringing them closer to Syria's third largest city. Friday's move into Rostan and Talbise come a day after opposition gunmen captured the central city of Hama, Syria's fourth largest, after the Syrian army said it withdrew to avoid fighting inside the city and spared the lives of civilians. The insurgents, led by the jihadi Hayat Tahrir al-Sham group, have said they will march to Homs and Damascus, President Bashar al-Assad's seat of power. A large magnitude 7 earthquake hit off the Northern California coast on Thursday, prompting coastal towns to evacuate low-lying areas amid a tsunami warning that was later canceled. No deaths or injuries were reported. California Governor Gavin Newsom addressed the situation while on a visit to the Otay Mesa border crossing, saying there was concern about damage in the north of the state.
It's another reminder of the state that we live in and the state of mind that we need to bring to our day-to-day reality here in the state of California in terms of being prepared for earthquakes. But early damage assessments are being made. We don't have any additional information at this time, but our teams are working collaboratively with the teams on the ground.
The U.S. Geological Survey said the quake, which hit at a shallow depth of 10 kilometers, was centered around 63 kilometers west of the town of Ferndale. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen will meet leaders of South America's Mercosur bloc on Friday, aiming to push through a controversial pact to create the world's biggest free trade zone despite last-minute resistance. Von der Leyen is hoping that the two-day summit in Uruguay will seal the deal that has been haggled over for decades. The deal would allow the EU to export cars, machinery, and pharmaceutical products more easily to South America. In return, Brazil and its neighbors would be able to sell meat, sugar, soybeans, and other products to Europe with fewer restrictions. Indian police used tear gas against dozens of farmers Friday who began marching from Punjab State along a key highway to Delhi to demand better prices for their crop. The farmers are demanding legal guarantees of more state support for crops and a debt waiver. They say the government must honor a promise to double their incomes. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Christina Menenti, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on African News tonight.
Ghana is one of those countries where that security is not a big deal. We've had transition after transition. We've had very smooth and peaceful elections in Ghana.
That's VOA's Paul Ndiho in Ghana's capital, Accra, closely monitoring the preparations for the vote tomorrow. Details coming up. Also, the DRC says it's on maximum alert after a mystery disease killed dozens of people in just over a month. And a Malian court has freed 11 junta opponents arrested for plotting against authorities. These stories and more on African News tonight. We start with our top story. The nearly 18.8 million Ghanaians registered to vote will be able to take part Saturday in the country's ninth general election since multi-party politics was reintroduced in the early 1990s. In the last 30 years, the country has had a series of closely fought but peaceful polls. VOA's Paul Ndiho is in Ghana's capital, Accra, closely monitoring the preparations for the vote. He tells me that Ghana has a reputation for orderly transfers of power between administrations, and the situation a day before the election is very calm.
Well, I'm downtown Accra. I've been driving around since morning. It's a little bit calm compared to what it was yesterday. Yesterday, it was full of fanfare, jubilation. Every candidate, the major candidates had their rallies here in Accra. But today, it's a little bit quiet. So people are going on about their daily day-to-day business.
Going about their daily day-to-day business, how is the security situation there a day before the election?
You know, Ghana is one of those countries where that security is not a big deal. We've had transition after transition. We've had very smooth and peaceful elections in Ghana for the last cycles of elections that have happened. No major incidents have happened. I don't see anything. As of today, I've not seen anything to suggest that there's going to be a security threat or anything of that nature.
And Paul, 18.8 million Ghanaians registered to vote will be able to take part in the country's ninth general election tomorrow. Who are the front runners for the presidency in Saturday's election?
Well, there are a couple of front runners. There are over five candidates running for president, but at least two major candidates, Vice President Muhammadu Bawumia and former President John Dramani Mahama. Those are the two major candidates who are running. But it's increasingly looking like those two candidates, the election is going to be between those two candidates.
It's interesting about Muhammadu Bawumia, who could make history as the country's first Muslim president as well.
Interesting. It's interesting that you say that. I was speaking to a couple Muslim voters here, and they're excited about that possibility. They're saying for the first time, one of their own could become the president of Ghana. Ghana is traditionally a very Christian country. You have a lot of Catholics, you have a lot of Protestants and other denominations. And of course, Muslims also play a significant role. But never in their history have they had a Muslim president. So if the current vice president, Muhammadu wins this election, definitely that's going to be a game changer for Ghana. And it might be also a great thing for the region, because Ghana is surrounded by countries that have significant numbers of Muslims in those countries.
And lastly, Paul, the big issues, the economic questions, and basically unemployment among young people, exodus of Ghanaians looking for better opportunities. So that will factor in tomorrow in the election, right?
Absolutely. There is no question about it. Unemployment is on the minds of a lot of young people. Education, free education for secondary school, primary schools, is on the minds of a lot of young first-time voters. Then you talk about the big picture, the economy. The economy is not that great. Ghana has had to restructure its debt a couple of times. When you walk on the street, the cost of food, the cost of everyday things is a little bit high as compared to what an average Ghanaian brings in every month or every week. So you have that as a contrast to what's been happening around. When you talk to people, I just talked to an expert who told me that, for example, this is all a result of COVID. The entire world experienced that, and Ghana has never fully recovered from that time when they had COVID-19. So a lot of young people are towing between that. Those are some of the driving factors that are driving this election: the economy, free education, and then how these candidates appeal to each one of the voters.
That was VOA's Paul Ndiho speaking with me from Ghana's capital, Accra. As you just heard, Ghanaians vote tomorrow in general elections. In the presidential race, the top two candidates are current Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia with the ruling New Patriotic Party, or NPP, and former President John Mahama, who leads the National Democratic Congress, the NDC. Our VOA team in Accra brings us comments from people at the two-party rallies. Mansour Junior supports the NPP candidates. Bawumia, he wants the government to expand its free secondary school program.
The best gift you can give me as a youth is education. Apart from education, I don't see whatever you can give me. I am a beneficiary of the free education senior high school. And you see, there is one policy that a lot of Ghanaians are not actually seeing. This is a long-term investment into the Ghanaian youth.
Spendy Love Nkrumah also backs the NPP because of its educational plan.
I'm the first batch of free education, and I know it has helped a lot of people, especially those who are in the villages, were able to even come to school because of free education. I know some certain people who couldn't have come if not free education. So I think their policy and their political party is really helping Ghana as a whole country.
However, NDC supporters of John Mahama point to the country's economic problems, including inflation, and criticize Bawumia, painting him as part of a failing system. Anthony Brenya was at Mahama's campaign rally Thursday.
You know, whenever we go to market, things that we bought it under His Excellency John Dramani Mahama for one city is now 15 cities. Things keep on escalating. And the dollar rate, a dollar per city, was very less under His Excellency John Dramani Mahama. Today, things are very high. A dollar is 17 cities. And things are just, you know, miserable. Life is, you know, miserable for a common Ghanaian. And they want to impose someone who has mismanaged the economy. So that is why we Ghanaians are saying that, yes, enough is enough.
Azida Garibald, who supports the NDC, also is worried about the country.
I've been in position for over 8 years with no improvement. The economy is very hard. Even with the youth, we don't have work to do. So we want our incoming president to come so that we get a work to do.
Check out VOA Africa and all our social media for the latest on Ghana's election. The Democratic Republic of Congo said Thursday it's on maximum alert over a mystery disease that has killed dozens of people in just over a month. The illness causes flu-like symptoms, fever, cough, and headaches, and has been described by Congolese authorities as an unknown public health event. first detected in late October. Cases have so far been limited to the Panzi region, around 700 kilometers southeast of the capital, Kinshasa. According to the initial data, the unidentified disease particularly affects younger people, with 40% of the cases among under five. Road transport has failed to fully resume between Cameroon and the landlocked Central African Republic, CAR, after a top-level crisis meeting this week to reopen borders sealed by Cameroon following escalating violence in CAR. Hundreds of truck drivers say they will cross into CAR when government troops protect them from rebels. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Cameroon's border town of Garoug-Boulaya, where humanitarian needs have been blocked for over 2 weeks.
Several hundred truck drivers who left Cameroon's Douala Sea port for Bangui, capital of the Central African Republic, say they are stranded in Garoug-Boulaya, a town on Cameroon's eastern border with CAR. CAR is a conflict-ridden landlocked country that depends on the Douala Sea port for about 95% of its goods and humanitarian aid. Among the stranded truck drivers is 49-year-old Kum Innocent, who says all of the drivers who have been in Garoug-Boulaya for over 2 weeks have agreed to stop shipping goods and humanitarian assistance into CAR because their lives are regularly threatened by armed gangs operating there.
We can't enter Bangui right now because of the insecurity on the way. Armed gangs put road barricades on the way. They even kidnapped some of us. And the house of ransom, our lorries are blocked down. Many of our merchandise are getting rotten, and we are losing a lot. That's what we are going through when we leave Garoug-Boulaya for Bangui.
Kum said that late last month, CAR rebels killed a Cameroonian truck driver and abducted at least two mechanics hired to carry out truck maintenance along the Douala-Bangui Road corridor. Cameroonian truck drivers say they want an immediate release of their kidnapped peers before they resume the shipment of goods to CAR. Elhaj Umaru is the head of Cameroon's Land Freight Transportation Bureau. Umaru says several hundred truck drivers stationed in Garoug-Boulaya want assurances that the CAR government will take responsibility for their security and safety, as well as the security and safety of their goods and trucks. He says the CAR government is responsible for the safety of every civilian in its territory. The angry drivers refused to fully resume work after a crisis meeting Wednesday of top Cameroon and CAR government and military officials in Garoug-Boulaya. Officials said the crisis meeting was to plead with the striking truck drivers to resume activity. Cameroon said it agreed to open the border. Gotran Jono Ahaba, CAR Minister of Transport and Civil Aviation, attended the crisis meeting. He says he is surprised that drivers are still reluctant to ship goods and humanitarian assistance to CAR. Ahaba says he has informed CAR President Faustin Ange Kanji Touadera that truck drivers along the Douala to Bangui Road want assurances of their safety before shipping goods to CAR. He says Touadera has given assurances that the Central African States military will organize convoys for drivers who feel threatened by armed gangs operating in CAR and attacking truck drivers for supplies. Speaking on CAR State TV on Thursday, Ahaba said the CAR military had located the trucks abandoned by drivers, adding that the trucks will be restituted, but did not say when. Cameroon's Transport Minister Jean-Ernest Messenangale Bibehe told Cameroon State TV on Thursday that negotiations have continued for truck drivers to suspend their protests. He assured them that CAR officials have agreed to protect trucks daily and free of charge from Garwabulai to Bangi and back. CAR descended into violence in 2013 when a rebel group forced then-President Francois Bozize out of office. Violence among CAR armed groups since then has forced close to a million Central Africans to flee to Cameroon, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Garwabulai, Eastern Cameroon.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is 1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. A Malian court on Thursday granted provisional freedom to 11 junta opponents arrested for plotting against authorities after they called for a return to civilian rule, according to one of the freed critics and a judicial source. The 11 released included former ministers and leaders of political parties and movements who signed a declaration published in March calling on the military to return power to civilians. They were arrested in June for plotting against the legal authorities and holding an illegal meeting while gathering in the capital Bamako at one of their homes at a time when political party activists were banned. The military authorities introduced the ban in April as part of their ever-harder hardline on dissent since seizing power in back-to-back coups in 2020 and 2021. They lifted the ban in July. In November interview, Morocco's foreign minister said his country plans to bring Central Sahel countries like Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali out of isolation with a joint development and port access package known as the Atlantic Initiative. As they battle militants linked to terror groups, Central Sahel countries have turned away from regional and international partners. So, what can their neighbors do to reach out to them? Henry Wilkins reports.
Central Sahel countries Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger are continuing their fight against militant groups, which has spread instability across the region. In the last 2 years, they have cut ties with France and the United States, which gave military assistance, and the West African political bloc ECOWAS, which includes many of their closest trading partners. The Central Sahel's military juntas said all three were a hindrance in their efforts to defeat the militants. In a November interview, Morocco's foreign minister said the country is attempting to break the region out of isolation. Bakary Sambe is the regional director of the Timbuktu Institute.
The launch of this Atlantic Initiative, which aims to connect coastal countries and provide the Sahel nations with Atlantic access, is part of Morocco's plan to leverage its historical ties as well as strategic interests.
Mais aussi ses intérêts stratégiques.
Paul Melly, a consulting fellow for Chatham House, says that although Morocco is a significant economic force and has a strategic interest in regional stability in West Africa, its geographical position may make the initiative difficult.
The economics of using Moroccan ports, you know, you either go round through Mauritania, in which case it's an incredibly wrong way, or else you go across the Sahara. I think it would mean going through Mauritania, at which point, you know, it's geographically a very long way round.
Melly points out that security conditions make the Sahara route dangerous. Despite chilly relations, the landlocked Central Sahel countries still rely heavily on bordering coastal nations like Senegal, Benin, Ghana, Togo, and Ivory Coast for port access. Sambe of the Mali-based Timbuktu Institute says cultural diplomacy may be more effective.
Morocco can still play a role in preventing violent extremism and combating terrorism by training imams and promoting a tolerant version of Islam as an alternative to religious extremism.
Par rapport à l'extrémisme religieux.
Sambe urged the coastal states to take a long-term view of relations and bear in mind that military juntas are likely a passing phase in the region's history. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
And time now for our Friday sports segment. Our VOA sports analyst, Mokbilia Baro, in studio to update us on the latest from the sports world. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So first in football news, the English Premier League had some midweek fixtures. Any standout games?
Absolutely. First and foremost, we have to talk about Chelsea versus Southampton. Although that is not a big game in terms of standing in position, this is a Chelsea team that is coming off of a really rough season last season, and they came into it this year with over 40 players on their team. New manager Maresca basically had to reorganize and reinvigorate this team, and man, are they clicking on all cylinders. They are currently in the second spot. They have 28 points, and they're tied with Arsenal, but because of the goal differential, they are up. They beat Southampton 5-1. That was a huge game for them. Manchester City got a win against Nottingham Forest 3-0. This is the first game that they have won in about a seven-game spill. This is the Man City that we've known that have been dominating.
How the mighty have fallen.
Oh, man. Yes, you couldn't have said it any better. This is the interesting thing about the game of football. All it takes is one or two of your key players to go down, and the entire structure of the team really looks different. Rodri, who was the Ballon d'Or winner this year, is a key and integral part of their central midfield and defense. And with him being out, they have been susceptible to a lot of runs in the middle and have not really been able to overcome it. Then another huge game, that probably which was the most exciting game over the past on Wednesday, was Liverpool versus Newcastle. The game ended up 3-3 with a shocking, you know, mishap by the goalkeeper, who is a replacement goalkeeper for their goalkeeper, Alisson. But he played really well. Outside of that fact, Newcastle goes up 1-0. Liverpool ties it 1-1. Newcastle goes up 2-1. They tie it 2-2. Liverpool goes up 3-2 with only a minute or two left in the game to end it. And then they secede, and that's a draw. So they lose 2 points, and that is a benefit for the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea, and Man City that are trying to catch up to Liverpool. Liverpool still on top of the Prem.
And that's that doesn't bode well with our producer. But moving right along, in NBA news, the LA Lakers lost by 41 to the Miami Heat, 134-93. What did the NBA world say about that?
Yeah, you know, the LA Lakers, when you think basketball, you think Showtime. I know, you know, during the years of, you know, Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, this, you know, James Worthy, this was the Showtime Lakers, and that legacy still holds true. The Lakers are the team you think about when you think about the NBA, and now LeBron James still being the face of the NBA in year 20, year 21, it really shows you that they have such an impact on the game. Currently, they are not doing well, and this is most likely the biggest loss that I believe that LeBron has actually had in his career. 41 points, and what kind of a poetic, you know, how poetic is it that he loses to a former team that he got two championships for to 41 points? So very, very interesting news, man.
And Saudi Arabia is set to develop a $3.3 billion sports complex in Riyadh. Will that attract more sports to the region?
I believe it will, Yehias. This is a part of the Crown Prince's vision, what he calls Vision 2030, being able to bring sports and cultivate a tourist attraction to bring individuals and people to the Middle East. It's a different look than Saudi Arabia has had in years, and I think it'll be something to watch in the future for sure.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Mokbile Abaro, our sports analyst, thank you. I'm Yehiz Wuhib. On behalf of our producer, David Van D, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.